so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please follow us on WhatsApp, YouTube, or Instagram. All our podcast series can be found wherever you listen to podcasts. I'd love to hear from you, so please reach out with questions, comments, or suggestions, or to be added to our WhatsApp groups. You can reach us through email using yakov.attached@gmail.com or on WhatsApp at 773-888-2413. Welcome to Attached, a platform for adding breadth and depth to everyday living. I'm Yakov Denishevsky, and this is the Fresh Perspectives series, where I invite the rising stars of the mental health field to share their insights and observations. I'm here with a really good friend for another Fresh Perspectives episode, Dr. Adir Pinchot, who is a PhD, finishing his postdoctoral fellowship, specializing in OCD and anxiety, working in the New York area. Adir, thanks so much for making time.
It's an honor and a privilege, Yakov. It's great to be here and looking forward to speaking with you.
So jumping right in, the question, the opening question for these mini conversations is, what is something from your perspective, psychologically speaking, related to mental health that is an important and relevant issue, whether in our particular Orthodox Jewish community or in society at large?
Sure. So one thing that I've done some research on, have thought a lot about, and also use in my clinical practice, is the concept of, or is the tool, the strategy of humor, and specifically coping humor. I did my thesis on the topic. And I think it's a skill, it's a strategy, a coping method that I think the world at large is at risk of losing. I think we've started to take things, you know, very seriously, maybe too seriously. And certainly that is, you know, required and important. But that ability to shift perspectives and to take on a humorous perspective of things, events in the world, both external situations that we find ourselves in and also internal, you know, thoughts and feelings that feel very heavy. I think having that capacity and using that capacity for humor, I think is essential. It's important. I think it's part of what makes us human. And I think it's a very powerful coping method. Rabbi Sacks actually has a beautiful line where he talks about how he loves Jewish humor because it allows us to laugh where otherwise we would cry. And he then goes on to say that what we can laugh at, we can rise above. And I think society at large, I think, is losing a little bit this capacity. I think we as part of the Jewish community and carrying on the Jewish Masorah legacy, I think we really have a legacy in Masorah of using coping humor, oftentimes, unfortunately, in some of the most grave circumstances. To quote from another, from a very well-known psychologist, Viktor Frankl, he talks about in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, talks about how he actually would train friends who were in the concentration camps with him to use humor. And he even gives examples of how they would use this coping humor, how they would project forwards to life after the concentration camp, and how they might humorously sort of carry with them certain behaviors or repeat certain behavioral patterns, things that they were used to doing in the concentration camp when they were, you know, back in freedom. So he talks about like being at a fancy dinner party with fancy guests, you know, forgetting where he is and then asking the, you know, hostess to like ladle from the bottom of the soup so that he wouldn't just get water, but he would actually get something substantive, which of course was something they asked for in the concentration camp, you know, to get any kind of sustenance that they could. So, and he even, I think, makes a comment that outsiders who weren't in that experience might would be shocked to learn that humor was going on there. But he speaks really eloquently about how humor can be used to cope with situations that can even be absurd in terms of the terror and the tragedy that people experience. And so I think for us, we have this kind of legacy. And there's actually another book, Ruth Weiss, who has a book on Jewish humor kind of through Jewish history. It's called No Joke. And the different ways that different Jewish communities who unfortunately had that common experience of suffering all used humor, albeit in different ways, to cope with that suffering, from communist Russia to Nazi Germany. So I think thinking about that and how that can inform and infuse our lives in the situation in the world that we're living in today, I think we have the framework, and I think it's something that we in the Jewish community do well, right? We have this constant, Purim once a year, which is kind of dedicated to this idea of taking things that are threats and making light of them, v'nahafochu, right? Finding the absurdity, turning them, shifting our perspective on them so that they're not as weighty and heavy and serious, and taking on a humorous perspective, which if not, even if just for a few seconds, can sort of lighten the mood and help us to rise above it for a few seconds. That's a very powerful thing. And that plays into the work that I do, specializing, in working with people with OCD and anxiety, because for people like that, sometimes it's external situations they're facing, which can feel very serious and very overwhelming and heavy. A lot of times for folks with OCD and anxiety, it's the internal experiences, the thoughts that they're having, whether it's anxious worry thoughts, whether it's upsetting intrusive thoughts in the case of OCD. And those thoughts create a really intense reaction because people tend to take those thoughts very seriously, very literally, right? And it weighs on them and they ruminate about it and they get stuck in that cycle of rumination. And third wave CBT emphasizes, disengaging from those thoughts, changing the way that you relate to them. And what more powerful way to change your relationship to something that feels serious and scary than to make light of it and to actually make a joke out of it. And that's the essence of coping humor. And so I've had people that I work with who I will, throw out there early on in treatment. Oh, what about the idea of actually kind of taking this thought, which feels so serious, and, trying to find something funny about it, some kind of funny perspective, right, as a way of changing your relationship to it, disengaging from it. And early on in therapy, I've had people who look at me and like, you're crazy. This thing is filling me with terror. I can't do that. I can't shift my perspective. I'm stuck in viewing it in this one way. And the cool thing is that I've also had people who, or those very same people some of the time, who after a few months of treatment will then come on their own, right? Talk about planting seeds. I'll plant that seed early on, and then they'll come back a few months later, and they've come up with independently some funny way of looking at it, or some joke, or they'll attach a funny line from a movie or a funny song, right, to the thought that was filling them with terror just a few months prior. And that for me is like, wow, like we're making progress here. And this is, it's a good thing. So I think that's something that, again, I think society in general is maybe losing or at risk of losing that ability to shift that perspective, to find humor in things. And I think it's something, a legacy that we have as Jews. And I think it's something that we have used in the past and should continue to really try to cultivate. And there's been research also that show that it can be trained, it can be worked on. It's something that can be cultivated. And it does have a number of beneficial psychological outcomes.
That is so interesting. I was not expecting that to be something that was ever brought up as like the thing that we are, struggling with. That's really, really interesting. Do you know why we're losing that? Why is that at risk?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I think, I've thought about this and read a little bit about it. So this is, the Fianius Daiti, my own personal reflection. I think humor is sort of nested within this broader concept of play, right? Being able to play, kind of playful and forth. And I think that heavily depends upon trust, mm-hmm. right? I think being able to, right, engage in play and playfulness, humor being an example, right, requires a certain amount of trust, right? A certain amount of knowing, where the boundaries are and where the boundaries, when those boundaries can be pushed, mm-hmm. and also appreciating that the other person is coming from a place of caring and compassion, and not from a place of trying to tear you down, mm-hmm. Or to get you. And I think that if I had to point to one kind of the broader trend that's putting humor at risk, so to speak, I think it's the trust factor, which we see play out in a whole variety of contexts. But I think that lack of trust, in society at large, between people, think that makes it very hard for humor to really sprout and grow.
So interesting. I guess there's also a way in which humor is sometimes, I guess, like everything, it depends on how it's used, right? Because there are times, I mean, tell me if you agree with this, that there are times I've had clients who it seems that humor for them is like an avoidance strategy,
yeah.
Right? Which is just the flip side of the same coin, because the avoidance is another way of, is just another version of coping, right? So, but you're talking about it in a way that it's a healthy, adaptive coping. And I've seen it also at times in a maladaptive kind of coping, right? So there's some way to distinguish between them.
Totally. And the research that I based my study off, my thesis off of, does make, you know, a number of distinctions. Right, there's interpersonal humor versus intrapersonal humor, right? Humor that I use kind of, whether the humor is aimed at someone else or aimed at myself. And then there's differences between, right, humor that sort of builds somebody up, whether that's the person I'm talking to or myself, versus humor that kind of brings someone down, tears someone down, or humor that leads to like avoidance. Mm-hmm. And that comes back to what I mentioned before about, right, taking things seriously and facing issues head on obviously is important. And humor can be used, as you pointed out, it can be used to avoid doing that altogether, in which case it's a problem. When it's used right, I think what it allows for is for us to actually face problems, deal with them head on, but to do it without being overwhelmed by the avalanche of emotion to the extent where we can't function. And I think it was actually, I believe it was Freud. Freud has a whole study of humor and talks about it in depth. And he talks about it as a defense mechanism, right? Which as a CBT person, I would probably refer to that as like a coping strategy. Mm-hmm. But there's obviously differences between them. So he talks about it as being one of the highest of the defense mechanisms, of the defense processes. And what he meant by that was that it really can have a very adaptive, very helpful function, as I just described, but it has to be used sort of in the right way and in moderation. And it easily can dip into a defense mechanism that is hurtful, right? And it can lead to, you know, avoiding problems or dealing with them.
Yeah, but I really like the way you just said it, which is that the humor can be used as a way of almost making the need to face issues more palatable. Like we can actually, it can be used as a point of entry to be able to engage.
Right, right. Yeah. I think it changes, right. It can change the tone and the feeling.
Yeah.
It doesn't remove the negative emotion. It doesn't solve the problem, right? But it can help us cope with the negative emotions so that we can get to tachlis, we can get to, right, trying to solve the problem, improve the situation.
Amazing. So I almost, I love this so much that I almost feel like we don't need the second half of the conversation, because the reason I intentionally have these two prompts of what's a challenge and then also what's something we do well is because I don't like how oftentimes in the therapy world or when you hear therapists speak in talks or podcasts, it's always just focused on the negative. But your response is to what the challenge is already so infused with something positive to talk about humor. So just that's really awesome. But I do still want to hear your answer to the second question, which is what is something you think we're doing well and how we can strengthen it.
Yeah, and you know, I think you may find that my second answer also has that kind of balance to it of areas we need to work on and also things we're doing well. I think that into another issue in terms of today's world, and you know, I'm certainly not the first to say this, is just sort of the online space and the way in which human inadequacies are either being airbrushed out of the picture on social media, or people are getting shamed, right, publicly shamed for their inadequacies. Mm-hmm. And it just, obviously the person who's targeted, you know, by those public shamings is affected. But what I've seen, again, people working with people who, you know, have the tendency towards anxiety or struggle with OCD, it affects them too, right? Even if they're not involved, just kind of seeing it, observing it, right? And it can trigger some of the things that they're very nervous, anxious about. And it adds this whole element of, okay, the thing that I'm nervous about, what if then I'm going to be shamed, ostracized for, which can really compound the distress that they're feeling. And I think one thing that, and so, you know, you talk so eloquently in the book about the self-acceptance and how important that is. And I think one thing that is crucial about self-acceptance is, to borrow from Kristen Neff, who talks a lot about self-compassion, which I think self-acceptance and self-compassion go hand in hand. She talks a lot about connecting with common humanity and the fact that, you know, my struggles are struggles that people, you know, other people also struggle with. And struggle is part of the human condition. And I think that's so powerful, but that requires that, right? I know that other people struggle, right? And in this kind of online context, it's very easy to move through the online space and not see other people struggle, and only to see kind of the airbrush version of other people's lives. So I think the response to that is the self-acceptance that you talk about in the book, but the self-acceptance requires me to see and hear from other people who are open about their struggles and are vulnerable. And I think that our community, the Jewish community, just from what I've seen, I think has been really making tremendous strides in that regard, in terms of people sharing struggles, in terms of people being vulnerable. It's not easy, and can be pretty terrifying and anxiety inducing, but it's so important, you know. And I think you, Yaakov, to give you a shout out for a second, have been so amazing about that, and I'm sure it's, you know, challenging, but you've really put yourself out there. And I think that's, in addition to all the wisdom and the profound truths that you are putting out in the podcast, in the book, in the videos you put out, I think people really are craving that vulnerability, you know. And when you share things that you've struggled with in the past or you currently struggle with, people really connect with that. And I think people need that, right, in order to realize, hey, I'm not the only one who struggles, right, with this or just in general. Other people struggle, even other people who are successful, even other people who are helping other people, right? As therapists, we can feel that hypocrisy of like, I'm struggling, but I'm also helping other people overcome their struggles. So shouldn't I be all figured out? I think that's good for us. And I imagine for people in other professions, especially people who are giving advice and guidance to others. So the bottom line being, I appreciate all that you've done. And I think we just need more of that. But I think I've noticed that there's more and more of that being shared. And I think that's just very crucial.
Yeah, so true. I agree. I think there is so much more of it happening. And like you said, need more, but there's a lot more that exists. Yes. Probably, I mean, I'd imagine if you compare it to like 5 years ago, you know, which is the blink of an eye, there's so much more happening now than there was then.
I completely agree. And I think it's... it's just a very powerful healing force for people. I think, you know, part of coming to therapy, I think, is, you know, bringing that vulnerability, having an ability to share it, and having someone else kind of reflect back to you, you know, and help you understand this idea that you are human and you struggle with this just the way that many other people struggle with this or something similar. So that's one outlet, one place to get it. But I think we need more of it. And I think we're getting more of it in other spaces as well, which is awesome.
Dr. Adir Pinchot, thank you. This was really, really enlightening. Really appreciate
it. Thank you. Thanks, Rav Yaakov. I really appreciate it. It's an honor.